Good morning. My name is Scott McDermott. I forgot to announce today, and Natalie's going to be mad at me. Today is one of the days, so all month long, if you give loose change to the church, that goes to our food pantry. Last week I lied to you and I told you it was going to Fletcher Place, which is a wonderful ministry, but not this month's loose change offering. So this month is for the food pantry, and so you can give an offering. You can still reach in your pockets and find some change and put that in the offering basket. That will go to our food pantry, which is an amazing ministry. They feed thousands of people every month, and right now they need some help. Not just financial, but they need paper bags, okay? So if you go grocery shopping this week and they ask, do you want paper or plastic, say paper, and then bring them to us because we use those to help give people the food from the food pantry. I also have several other notes from Natalie that this month coming up is the 25th anniversary of our food pantry, which is pretty exciting. We've been feeding people for 25 years. It literally started in a closet. Now it takes up the entire building over there. So it's an amazing ministry that has just continued to grow and grow as the need has continued to grow and grow. So we have all these special events coming up to celebrate the 25th anniversary. So be on the lookout for those. But one of them, and I'm excited about this, is a euchre tournament. I told you a couple weeks ago that I love euchre. I love to play euchre. So there is a euchre tournament coming up. We would love for you to be a part of it. So again, the details for all of that stuff is on the website. In the bulletin, you can find all the info about how to be a part of that and support our food pantry. Was that good, Natalie? All right, thank you. Awesome. Well, hey, we are starting a series last week called Life Hacks. It's all about the book of Proverbs. And I want to start off by telling you what a life hack is. It's kind of a social media thing. They get shared on Facebook or Instagram. So a life hack is anything that makes life simpler. The official definition is any technique or strategy adopted to manage one's daily life or activities in a more skillful manner. Now, if you still don't understand what a life hack is, we once again have a video with some life hacks from our friends Tripp and Tyler. This week's life hacks are all about the workplace. So here are some life hacks for you if you work in an office.
There's a better way to organize all of those cords that are tangled up in your drawer. Just take some empty toilet paper rolls, put them vertically inside of a shoebox, and now you can individually store each of those cords that you'll never use.
Stuck on your lunch break with no bottle opener? You can easily open a Coca-Cola by taking that big annoying brick part of your computer charger, taking it apart, and using it as a bottle opener. Also, you can keep people from stealing your lunch food by simply writing your boss's name on the back.
Are you annoyed by how loud that guy a couple of cubes over talks on his phone? Here's a great way to annoy him in return. Just take an air horn and tape it to the trunk of his chair.
Are you always wondering how old the coffee is in the break room? Write down all of the hours of your workday around the outside of an upside-down cup. Place another cup on top and draw an arrow pointing down. Now, when someone brews a pot, all they have to do is twist the cups so the arrow points to the time it was made.
Shirt wrinkled, but you don't have an iron handy? Just dampen the wrinkled area and use a hair straightener.
Hey, thanks for letting me borrow this.
Anytime. Tired of having to do this because you don't know which cable is which? Well then, make sure you save your bread ties from your loaves of bread and then use them as labels.
To the one person in history who completely finished all of the spices and the spice rack that he got for a wedding present, you can now use it as an office supply, Lazy Susan. Please pass the tax.
Say what?
Just one more. Thank you.
There you go. So there's some life hacks for you that'll make your work life so much better. There will be more of those again next week. So you got to keep coming back if you want more of these life hacks. Well, the reason we're calling the series Life Hacks is because the Bible also gives us some really simple, easy-to-follow advice that if we do it, our life will be better. It's called the Book of Proverbs. And the Book of Proverbs is just an assortment of advice. And as you read it, it seems a little jumbled, a little confusing. So what I've done over the course of this series is try to unjumble it for you. So we put it into four major categories. So last week we talked about, which is the predominant theme of the book, wisdom and folly, right? That people who make good choices are wise, and people who make poor choices are fools. And that really is the overarching theme of the book. The next couple weeks, we're going to talk about some of the more minor characters or components of the book. So today we're talking about relationships. Next week we're going to talk about money, which I'm not going to ask for your money. I'm just going to tell you what the book of Proverbs says about money. And then the final week we will talk about attitude. And attitude, I mean things like humility, selfishness, pride, some of those kinds of things that the book of Proverbs addresses. Now, in my Bible classes that I took, I had a professor that used to say one thing over and over and over again as we would start to study a new passage. He would say, context is king. Context trumps everything else when it comes to reading the Bible. Because you can read it and not understand it. But when you all of a sudden start to understand the context, it becomes clear. So for example, if you were reading the book of Corinthians, which is in the New Testament, it would be good to know who wrote it, which is Paul. It would be good to know who he wrote it to, which is the church in Corinth. It would be good to know why he was writing the book, which is because there was all kinds of turmoil in that church based largely on some of the issues going on in that community. And when you start to understand what was going on, then all of a sudden the things that Paul is saying make more sense. That's context. And when you have context, the Bible becomes clear. Except in the book of Proverbs. Context in the book of Proverbs actually makes the book of Proverbs confusing. Because the Proverbs themselves are pretty clear. They're simple, they're short, they're often very to the point and easy to understand. Even on a first reading, you'll probably understand what the author is trying to tell you. But if you understand the context of who wrote it, it becomes a little bit more confusing. Let me explain what I mean. So last week I told you that the predominant author of the book is a guy named Solomon. Now Solomon was a king of Israel. He was the son of King David, the most famous king. And Solomon was easily the most wealthy and powerful of all the kings of Israel. So he's a very upstanding guy, kind of. He was a guy you would respect unless you knew more about him. On the surface, Solomon seems like the perfect person to write the book of Proverbs. But when you start to dig into his personal life, you realize that, hey, I'm not sure this is the guy I want to listen to. But I want you to listen to him. I want you to listen to his wisdom. But I want you to understand that Solomon is a little bit of a mystery. He's a mystery because, on one hand, the advice he gives is really, really good. But on the other hand, he had trouble living it himself. So there's a few things that I want you to know. First of all, is he qualified? The answer is yes, and I'll explain why. Second, how did he get so wise? I'll tell you in a second. And then third, why was he so good at giving advice, but not so good at following it, which I'm going to call walking the walk. Okay, so the first question is, was he qualified? The answer is yes. 1 Kings chapter 10 says this. King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom that God had put in his heart. Even other dignitaries came and just sat at his feet and tried to learn from his wisdom. He was very, very, very wise, especially in the area of ruling a nation. When it came to ruling a nation, Solomon was the bee's knees, right? He was the best of the best, and other world leaders even came to try to learn from him. So he was qualified to give advice. He was, in fact, wise, at least in certain areas. Now, how did he get so wise? He got wise because he asked God for wisdom. In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, it gives us this interesting little exchange between God and Solomon. Basically, they're praying. Solomon is praying to God, but we get the conversation. It says, God appeared to Solomon and said to him, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Solomon answered, you have shown great kindness to David my father and have made me king in his place. Give me wisdom and knowledge that I may lead this people, for who is able to govern this great people of yours? God said to Solomon, Sorry, since this is your heart's desire, and you have not asked for wealth, possessions, or honor, nor for death of your enemies, and since you have not asked for a long life, but for wisdom and knowledge to govern my people, therefore wisdom and knowledge will be given you, and I will also give you wealth, possessions, and honor, such as no king who was ever before you had, and none after you will have. So Solomon can ask for anything he wants. He could ask for money or power or anything else, but instead he asks for wisdom. And in particular, he asks for wisdom in governing the people that God has put him in charge of. And so God gives him that wisdom and wealth and power on top of it. And Solomon is. He's very, very wise in exactly the areas that he asked for wisdom. He is wise in governing. He is wise in finances. He is wise in those areas. Maybe he should have also asked to be wise in his personal life, because he did not, and he was not. So I want to tell you that Solomon, in all of his great wisdom and knowledge, was not good at living much of the advice that he gave. And it's really interesting, because today we're going to tell you what the book of Proverbs says about relationships. Solomon is terrible at relationships, okay? Relationships are not his thing. Now, he has lots of advice for us about relationships, but it turns out he's not good at actually doing it. So I want to tell you why he was not good at doing it. He couldn't walk the walk. Sorry, I have a throat lozenge and I'm a little bit sick. Okay, in 1 Kings chapter 11, it says, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. So God gave a command to Solomon. Do not marry people from these countries. And then he even told him why. Because if you do this, it will turn your heart away from God. But Solomon ignores that commandment from God and doesn't seem to care about what will happen to him as a result. Instead, he just goes ahead and marries these women. It says, nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Solomon had a little bit of a problem with women. Just a touch. I got to admit, I have one wife, and I struggle, right, as a husband. 700 wives. It's crazy. Anyway, so Solomon has all these wives, and that's not even the problem, okay? I'm not saying it's good, but that's not even the problem. The problem is that these wives don't worship God. They come from all over the world, and they have their own religions, and they bring those religions to the palace, and they worship their gods at the palace with Solomon. The real issue here is idolatry, that Solomon starts to worship these other gods that his wives introduce him to. That is the real problem. It says, his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord. So again, Solomon allows a foolish decision to marry these women who worship other gods. He allows that foolish decision to affect his faith. And ultimately, it's going to affect the entire nation of Israel, because he is unable to do the right thing, which is what I told you last week wisdom is. Biblically, is doing the right thing. Solomon does not do the right thing. He does the wrong thing. He does the foolish thing, and it changes his life, and it changes the nation of Israel. So even though he knew the law, and he knew the right thing, he didn't do the right thing. Now, it's easy for me to point at Solomon and say he was foolish in this, but let's be honest. All of us struggle to do the right thing. All of us struggle to walk the walk. In fact, the Apostle Paul tells us this in Romans chapter 7. I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. So Paul struggles with this same thing. Maybe not marrying 700 wives, but he struggles to do the right thing. We all know, for the most part, right and wrong. But it's sometimes hard to do the right thing. And conversely, we all know things that are bad for us, but sometimes we do them anyway. And so Paul tells us that, Solomon shows us that, And we all know that, that it's hard to live faith. It's easy to know stuff. It's hard to do stuff. So today we're going to talk about relationships. I'm going to give you advice. It's from Solomon. So take it with a grain of salt. It's good advice. If you do it, your life will be better. If you ignore it, your life will not be better. It might even be worse. But I want to tell you now that this is difficult advice. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. And we wouldn't even need the book of Proverbs. But instead, we need this book because it tells us what to do. It's up to us to actually do it. So we have several topics I want to cover quickly today. And again, the Proverbs are very short. So here are kind of the subtopics of relationships. First, we're going to talk about getting wise counsel, which we touched on last week as well. We're going to talk about choosing our friends wisely. Next, we will talk about being a good friend. Then we will talk about marriage advice, which again is coming from Solomon. In some ways, you're like, he should have lots of marriage advice. He has 700 wives. In other ways, you're like, I'm not sure I should listen to this guy. But it's good advice, nonetheless. And then finally, we'll talk about how to treat our enemies. So all of these are different kinds of relationships that maybe you have, maybe you don't. But let's start with one that we should all listen to, which is getting wise counsel. This is so important, and Solomon says this over and over and over again in the book of Proverbs, that if we want to make the right decision, we're going to need help. If we want to make the right decision, especially in big decisions, if you're thinking about changing jobs, if you're thinking about moving to a new place, if you're thinking about marrying someone or starting a family, you should talk to people first. And specifically, you should talk to people who you respect. You respect their faith. You respect the decisions that they consistently make. Seek those people out and ask them for advice. Ask them to help you make a good decision. And again, the book of Proverbs tells us this over and over again. The first one we're going to look at is Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. It says, "The way of a fool seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice." We don't just do whatever comes naturally. We should stop, think about it, seek advice, and then do the right thing. Because in the heat of every moment, it's easy to make a quick decision or an emotionally charged decision or maybe even a physiologically charged decision. But we shouldn't let our bodies or our emotions make major decisions for us. We need to pause, seek wise counsel, and then make the best decision, not just the decision that seems right at the moment. Or how about Proverbs 15:22? "Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed." You start to see some of Solomon's propensity toward ruling. He's a king, right? And he has advisors. He doesn't have to listen to those advisors because he's the king and ultimately he's going to make the decision. But he does listen to his advisors. He seeks them out. He seeks their perspective. He tries to understand different people's ideas. And then he makes the decision. And with many advisors, you can succeed. Or this one's maybe even more clear that he is a ruler. It says in Proverbs 24, "Surely you need guidance to wage war, and victory is won through many advisors." Solomon's not a military leader. He's never served in the army. So who is he going to ask before going to war? He's going to seek out the generals. He's going to seek out his commanders, and he's going to ask for their input. That's important in every area of life. If you're not good at finances and you're about to make a major financial decision, go find someone that's really good at finances and ask them for help. If you don't know the Bible, but you want to make a solid biblical decision, find people that know the Bible and then ask them for advice. If you're starting a young family, you got babies, and you don't understand how in the world you're going to ever potty train these kids, right? Go find a parent who has been through that, and they will tell you that you're going to hate your life for the next couple months, but it is possible, okay? There is light at the end of the tunnel. You can do this, but maybe they have some tricks. Maybe they have some wisdom. Maybe they're just going to tell you to bribe your kids. Whatever works, right? You can do this, and advice will help. All right, the next relationship topic I want to hit is to choose your friends wisely. Choose your friends wisely. I remember my freshman year of college, I moved into the dorm, and there were a couple guys across the hall that seemed really nice. They invited me over to watch movies or play video games. We would hang out in the dorm. And I liked hanging out with them. And you know, it was nice to have some friends because I didn't know very many people. And so I would hang out with them quite a bit. But I noticed after several months of spending a lot of time with these guys that they were very negative. Right? Everything that could be complained about, they complained about. Could be the weather, might be the food at the dining hall, might be this particular teacher that they didn't like. They just complained all the time. And it was kind of like they were trying to one-up each other. Like one guy would complain about the weather, and then the other guy would be like, yeah, well, you didn't have to walk all the way to the environmental science building in this terrible weather. I was so cold. And then the other guy's like, I was even colder. So they were just trying to one-up each other all the time with their negativity. And I found myself complaining more than I normally do. I don't complain very often. It's not something I do. It's not something I want to do. But when I was with them, I complained. So guess what I stopped doing? Hanging out with those guys. Now, I was still polite. I still saw them in the hallway. But after a while, I decided I don't want to be a negative person, and they're kind of pulling me down. And that's the reality. If we don't carefully choose the people that we associate with, that we spend time with, we can start to develop some of those negative habits that people have. And Proverbs tells us this very clearly. We're going to start with Proverbs 27:17, which is such a classic proverb. It says, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. You got to seek people out that are going to make you better. Seek out friendships and relationships with people that are going to sharpen you. Right? They're going to make you a better version of yourself. They're going to challenge you. They're going to push you. Maybe not with the words that they say, but just how they live their life. You're going to want to be a better dad when you're with them. You're going to want to be a better employee when you're with them because they go out of their way to go above and beyond, and they do things, wise things, over and over on a repeated basis, and you're going to want to be like that when you're with them. Seek out those kinds of friends. Seek out the people that sharpen you instead of dull you. Or Proverbs 12:26 says, the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Or Proverbs 13:20, walk with the wise and become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. This is one of those that is absolutely worth memorizing, right? If you want to be wise, spend time with wise people. And again, not smart people, because I told you biblically it doesn't mean smart. It means people that make the right decisions. So if you want to make the right decisions, find people who make the right decisions and spend time with them. And then you will make better decisions. My best friend in high school and I got invited to a lot of parties. But that wasn't something that we wanted to do. Right? I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to smoke. I didn't want to do those things. But I got invited to a lot of those parties. And so my best friend and I made a pact. And we were wrestlers. We were kind of stupid, you know, hormone-raging teenage boys. And so the pact was this. If one of us messed up and did some of those things, the other one could beat the other one up. Now, I didn't really think that I was going to beat up my best friend, but he was a little bit crazy, and I conceived that he might do this to me. And so there were a couple times where I would call Brent up, and I would say, hey, I got invited to this party. What are you doing tonight? And he would just say, yeah, let's go hang out. And instead, we would watch a movie or play basketball or whatever it was, but we didn't go to the party. Right? He was that wise friend that I needed at a critical point in my life, where I knew if I was with him, I wasn't going to do something stupid. I wasn't going to mess up because he made good decisions and he helped me make good decisions. And those kinds of friends are so valuable. Or one more, Proverbs 18:24, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Right? We need friends, especially during the hard times of life. We need friends when everything else is going wrong and we don't know who to talk to. We need friends who will be there for us in those moments. Friends that you can pick up the phone at 2 in the morning and say, I need to talk now. And they will answer the phone and they will meet you and they will talk to you and they will help you. Those are the kinds of friends that are so valuable. Those are the kinds of friends you want. And if you're looking around your life and you're saying, I don't think any of my friends care about me that much, then you need to seek out some new friends. And there's a whole room full of people right here who would be good candidates for your friendship, okay? Who are trying to make good decisions, who are trying to live life. That's part of what church is supposed to be, right? That we're a community that is there for each other in the hard times. Not just casual, see you on Sunday morning people, but the friends who will help us and support us. All right, but if you want good friends, you're going to need to be a good friend, okay? You're not just going to randomly find good friends. You need to be a good friend because they're not going to want to be your friend if you're a bad friend because they're good friends and they're only going to want other good friends. So you have to be a good friend first. I would also say this, if you are single and you are considering dating and you're looking for Mr. Right or Mrs. Right, the advice I always give, be Mr. Right. Be Mrs. Right. And then they will come find you. Does that make sense? So you got to be a good friend if you want to have good friends. Proverbs 3 says this, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck and write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and good name in the sight of God and man. Or Proverbs 12:25, anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up. Right? If you want friends, you need to be an encourager, not a discourager. If you're going around spreading negativity and complaints, people aren't going to want to spend time with you. But if you are constantly spreading encouragement and love, they're going to want to spend time with you all the time. Or Proverbs 25:17, I love this one from the New Living Translation. Don't visit your neighbors too often. You will wear out your welcome, right? We've probably all had that kind of neighbor that's constantly knocking on the door, and you don't really want to answer the door, and you're closing the curtains and hiding. Okay, don't be that kind of neighbor. No one enjoys that. A couple more things. I know we're running short on time here. So Solomon does give us some marriage advice, and you will notice that it's very male-oriented. Okay, the marriage advice talks mostly in negative terms about women. It's because it was written by a man, and it was written by a man thousands of years ago in a male-dominated society. But I believe these verses could be flipped very easily to talk about both genders. So for example, Proverbs 21:9, better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Think about that for a second. But this is true of men as well, right? Women don't want to be married to some man who's quarrelsome, that's always picking a fight or arguing. That's not a fun environment to live in. And so how do we be a good spouse? We try to keep the quarreling to a minimum. We try to be an encourager, a person who makes a loving, wonderful home to live in for our spouse. Or this one from Proverbs 31, which, by the way, the entire chapter of Proverbs 31 is wonderful, especially for women. But I think, again, this could be flipped easily. It says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. If you're looking for a spouse, I know it's easy to think about outward appearances. I know it's easy to think about what kind of job do they have or you know, all those kinds of things. And I'm not saying they're unimportant. But character is the most important thing that you want in a spouse. And a husband of noble character is certainly worth more than rubies. I know from experience that a wife of noble character is worth more than any treasure. I married my wife because she's beautiful and because she's wonderful, but her character is unsurpassed. And I thought to myself, this is the kind of woman I want to marry. I'm going to scoop her up as quickly as possible before somebody else notices. All right, one more relation advice for you, which is how to treat your enemies. Now, maybe you don't have a lot of enemies, but there are probably people that get under your skin. Maybe they're at work. Maybe they're here in the church. People that kind of drive you crazy. Solomon understood this very well. He had enemies, even in his own family. He had other countries that wanted to hurt his country. He certainly had enemies. And I think we think that Jesus was the first one to ever say that we should be kind to our enemies, but it's not true. Proverbs tells us the same thing. In Proverbs chapter 20, it says, do not say, I will pay you back for this wrong. Instead, wait for the Lord, and he will avenge you. So don't look for revenge. We got to trust that God will avenge. So it's not our place to seek revenge. Don't do evil for evil. Instead, put it in God's hands and trust God to take care of it. And then finally, and this one is amazing, Proverbs 25:21-22 says, if your enemy is hungry, give them food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. You're like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. When you are nice to people that are mean to you, it will mess them up. They will be super confused. They'll be like, wait, I was really mean to that guy. Why is he being so nice to me? When we are nice to people, it will make them feel a little bit guilty. It will shake them a little bit. And that could be really good for them. But in the end, it's our responsibility to be kind, even to people that are not kind to us. So Paul, who I've spoken of several times, quotes from this exact verse in Romans 12:20, and then adds in verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Guys, again, this relational advice is so solid. If you follow this advice in your marriages, in your friendships, even with your enemies, your life will be better. God will change you, and God will change your relationships, maybe even your family, maybe even your workplace, if you start to follow this advice. But it really is up to you to put it into practice. And it's hard. Solomon knew all the advice to give. He just couldn't do it when it came to relationships. Start putting it into practice. Maybe even just one proverb. Pick one proverb that we've talked about today about how to treat people. And if you could live out that one proverb, it would start to change who you are. It would start to change your life. It would start to change others around you. Hey, I'm going to pray, but before I do, I want to mention that next week again, we're going to talk about money. I know it's the topic nobody ever likes to talk about in church, but I want to give you the biblical advice from Solomon to us about money. And I will say this, Solomon may have not been good at relationships, but he was really good with money, okay? So this is solid advice that you can listen to. Let's pray. Father God, thank you so much for these words, for your words that can help us to live our lives differently. They can help us to treat people the way we want to be treated, to be a good friend, to be kind even to our enemies. God, to make sure that we don't take our marriage relationship for granted. Father, help us to be the kind of people that you want us to be. And as we do that, as we live out those words, that, Father, we would be a light in our communities of kindness and compassion. Father, we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.